This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Downey. This week, our topic is drone technology and agriculture. Our guest is Mariah Scott, CEO of Rantizo. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. Rantizo's Mariah Scott is next. Wanted to take a moment and talk to soybean farmers. Nearly 500,000 of you are in the U.S., growing over 4 billion bushels of soybeans a year. And the Soy Checkoff is working hard to grow demand, innovating, testing, and showcasing new uses in new industries, such as firefighting foam, tires, straws, shoes, or 1,000 other products. To learn more, visit unitedsoybean.org and keep on growing. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. As computer and flight technology continues to advance, drones continue to be a valuable asset to industry and to agriculture. Mariah Scott is CEO of Rantizo and a founder of the American Spray Drone Coalition.
I've been in drones for the last 10 years, and I really started in the commercial sector where we started to see small drones, hold them in your hand, step up from being toys to really being useful tools for mapping, for surveying, for inspection. And all of a sudden, we saw uses across construction, engineering, surveying, energy, utilities, mining, real estate, all kinds of areas where now you could get an aerial perspective. And so you can inspect a roof for hail damage. You can inspect power lines to see if there's vegetation overgrowth. You can inspect rivers, bridges and look for bridge issues. You can inspect roads and look for road damage. I mean, we saw after the terrible storms just a few months ago that drones were some of the first equipment in to really be able to assess the damage in North Carolina and some of the other areas that were hit so badly. Drones were an essential low-cost tool to providing, you know, search and rescue and being able to survey the damage when it was too dangerous to get vehicles in. They're super effective tools for that. And in agriculture, what we've seen is drones kind of started for scouting and field mapping and being able to easily be able to survey land and understand what's going on and give you identification and maps to help you better treat and better protect the land. And now we're seeing that spray drones are coming online as another tool for crop protection and for custom application.
What other portions of industry or of business do you see drones now being a viable option? How close are we to the cusp of seeing a lot more drones doing a lot more things in urban America?
I think we're close, but maybe not as close as you might think. In terms of what I think of imagery, like inspection, mapping, surveying, drones are already in widespread use. In terms of some of the delivery use cases, yes, I think in some areas and in some cities, and you are starting to see drone deliveries done. But I think it's going to be a long time before you're going to order a burrito and a drone's going to deliver it to you. I do think we'll start to see more autonomous planes, small planes. I know a number of companies are looking at retrofitting helicopters and small planes to be more autonomous and to be able to do more cargo deliveries that way. But the individual drone delivery, I think it's a ways out.
With agriculture, we've come such a long, long way. How far have we come, and what are we on the cusp of what drones will be able to offer farmers today?
I think that's a great point. We have come a long way. And in agriculture in particular, we're seeing drones that are capable of carrying payloads. People are using them. DJI has a product called the Flycart, you know, that can deliver things and is being used in agriculture and is really effective. And we've made a lot of progress there. And I think we're going to continue to see specialized drones for hauling different equipment around. I think, you know, we're going to see that in agriculture and in construction a lot. It's a very viable, effective thing. I think also we're going to continue to see drones be more and more sophisticated at imagery and analysis and being able to identify weeds, identify pest pressures, identify and give you really deep insight about what's going on in agriculture. I think that's a great use for drones. We're going to continue to see more of that. And on the spraying, I think we're going to continue to see drones be more and more capable as another way to deliver crop protection and do custom application, where the drones are able to function in conditions where a ground sprayer might be challenged, like when the ground is wet or where you have irregular fields. But increasingly, drones flying in swarms, flying at night, are going to be able to cover broad acres. They're going to be able to really pretty sustainably do the application where we're using less product and still achieving the same great results. We're doing so in a way that is safer with and just as effective. That's certainly the long-term goal, and we feel really excited by what we're seeing from drones in terms of the effectiveness and their ability to treat acres that aren't well treated today and to do so in a really economical way.
Is artificial intelligence being incorporated with GPS technology and optics for drones to be even more effective for farmers today?
Yes. A number of companies are using artificial intelligence and really sophisticated analysis to be able to recognize and identify different issues. So, you know, whether that's weed identification or pest pressure identification, and then being able to produce really detailed maps to say, here are the areas and the specific types of issues that you have. And then the trick is being able to essentially transfer that data to a spray drone so that you can do really specific spot spraying only in the areas where you've already used the drone to identify that you have an issue. And we're starting to see that happen. At Rantizo, we've been really involved in R&D on that, really trying to connect the, here you have a really detailed map where we've used AI to say, okay, you have these issues, you have these places, and then we're using the drone to go in and autonomously do that spot spraying to take care of those issues.
Rantizo treated or sprayed 300,000 acres in 2024. In 2023, though, across the industry, 3.7 million acres sprayed with drones. When this first came in, the question was regulation. What sort of a license would an individual have to have? How high could the drone fly? Did the drone need to remain within line of sight? How has the FAA embraced, and what are yet the challenges for those who would like to utilize drone technology?
Great question. I just want to highlight the tremendous growth that we're seeing, because you mentioned the 2023 numbers, and the American Spray Drone Coalition, of which I'm a founding member, we just finished surveying users across the country. And this year, for the 24 season, drones were ag drones, spray drones, were in 42 states. We think they treated a little over 10 million acres. So that is tremendous growth year on year from the numbers that we had from last year. More than 50 different types of crops. So we're seeing tremendous growth for the spray drones and the acres treated. It's really exciting to see that kind of impact. You asked about the FAA. The FAA has really made an effort to streamline the approval process for spray drones and to ensure that we're still being safe. They are still aircraft, and they are flying in the airspace with other kinds of aircraft, crop dusters and helicopters. And so it's important that operators are licensed and qualified and insured, just like they would be with any other kind of aircraft. But the FAA has done a good job of trying to streamline the Part 137 operating certificate and the requirements for that that are needed for spray drone pilots. There are still requirements. Flying within line of sight is one of them. There are safe standoff distances that are required for operators. You need special approvals if you're going to swarm. So if you're going to fly more than one drone to one pilot, you need special approvals to fly at night. But the FAA has worked through a process for evaluating and granting those approvals. And I feel that they've really worked hard to kind of manage that balance between we need to be safe and we need to make sure that we know that we're operating in airspace where other aircraft are also operating, and also that we need to streamline those approvals because we have so much growth in the demand for the services.
What else does Washington need to do, either from a legislative standpoint or a regulatory standpoint, to allow this technology to come to the hands of producers and those that would serve farmers and ranchers across the country and aid in their productivity and their sustainability goals?
I think the main thing really is to make sure that the FAA has the resources and support they need to be able to process approvals on a timely basis. We have seen, as the demand for Part 137 operating certificates has increased, that the timeline to get those certificates approved has extended, and that's really a resourcing question, just ensuring that the FAA has the support that they need to be able to process those applications on a timely basis and ensure that people who are applying for their operating certificates can get them quickly and get up in the air and fly. That's the main thing. That's not a big change. I think we're fortunate with the spray drones that we have an existing regulatory framework with the Part 137 operating certificate, and especially this past season where we have started to see approvals for swarming and for nighttime operations and for reduced visual observer requirements. Those have really helped streamline operations and make the drones more effective. I think it's mostly just making sure that the resources are there or the processes are there so that approvals can be evaluated and can be processed quickly on a timely basis.
What are the goals and the mission of the American Spray Drone Coalition? What brought you together and what keeps you together now?
I thank you for that question. We, starting in the spring, when we saw the proposed Countering CCP Drones Act come in the House, I pulled together the other big distributors and dealers, folks who were really active in the spray drone industry, so that we could start to build awareness for the really positive and beneficial impact that spray drones were having in agriculture, and start to provide some sources of information for the benefits that spray drones were having and the risks to agriculture, and if they were banned, which is kind of what the bill was about. So we pulled together a grassroots organization. We want to be a unified voice, both for spray drone operators and for American farmers, and to make sure that we maintain access to the best technology and we give farmers the choice of what tools they want to use. And we make sure that we're using regulatory and legislative efforts to enhance competitiveness, to give farmers choice and access to the best technology while making sure that we are providing for that in a safe way. So in the same way that the FAA manages safety in the airspace, that we can use other measures to work on security standards, data protection standards, and ensure that any data that is collected is safe and secure in the same way that we would with other technologies. There's a lot of existing security standards there, and so we got together to advocate for, hey, let's apply the security standards we have in other industries here to spray drones, and let's maintain competitiveness for American agriculture and American farmers. We want them to have access to the best tools and technologies. We need to make sure that we're advocating for that and that we are raising awareness for the positive effects that drones are having.
For the sake of the conversation, I'll take the view of national security at all costs. Initially, there was concern about Chinese technology used in our smartphones and what that might enable a state-owned company to be able to do inside the U.S. There's also been the challenge that you mentioned, the Countering CCP Drones Act, H.R. 2864, concern that many of these drones that farmers are using or are shopping to use have also Chinese technology. Many believe that technology ultimately could be used against us although they didn't necessarily spell out how it might be used against us, whether as a weapon or whether just gathering data and information. From the American Spray Drone Coalition, what gives you confidence that using Chinese technology is important, and why couldn't we use technology produced here or in other countries that we consider safe?
It's a great question, and it's really, from my perspective, it's really a question of timing and trying to have, when you're trying to balance the kind of concerns about security with also providing access to what is really a very effective and very affordable technology for farmers. We don't have U.S. options yet for spray drones that are comparable in terms of price point and performance. So a lot of the concerns around security that were raised really applied to the imagery drones, to drones that are being used to, for example, inspect rail lines or inspect power plants, and a concern that those drones were inspecting critical infrastructure and that imagery data could in some way be compromised or could be used in some fashion. And for imagery drones, we have U.S. options. There are U.S. manufacturers, and that is not the area where the American Spray Drone Coalition has really focused. We've tried to focus very much on agriculture and on spray drones, where we don't yet have U.S. options that are competitive and comparable. So what would happen is that U.S. farmers are paying more, maybe 2 to 3 times more, for a tool that is not as capable as the Chinese options. So what we've been, and that's not a great outcome. That's an outcome where you pay more for a product that does less. And, we're holding back competitiveness against, the other markets where farmers have access to that technology. So what we've been advocating for is, hey, let's work towards the security standards and data protection standards that we need. They exist, and we've used them very successfully with other technologies. You mentioned, our smartphones. Let's use those standards while we can transition to having better U.S. options available, because that will take some time to build up a U.S. industry and build up a U.S. spray drone industry that is competitive and able to, to perform at the same level.
It is mentioned that this countering CCP drones might be added to the National Defense Authorization Act, which must be approved this year in the lame duck session. What are the points you want Congress to consider about adding this legislation, and is there a way to amend it that would allow agriculture to have access to the technology, but also at the same time give solid evidence that we are protecting us from foreign threats?
I think given the time pressure on getting the NDAA passed, that's a top priority, that adding this countering CCP drones act in the way that it's proposed is problematic. It enacts a ban on DJI drones that would really have negative impacts on U.S. agriculture, and because we don't yet have the U.S. options, it also doesn't directly help U.S. competitiveness, because it just takes the most effective tool out without giving us U.S. industry support and alternatives. We think that the concerns about security and data protection can be addressed with data protection and security standards acts that require those kinds of initiatives, and we have other areas that we can look to for those. If we're seeking data security or data protection, then we have other standards that we can look to, and we could look to legislation that would specifically address those threats. If we're trying to protect U.S. competitiveness, then we think investments in U.S. industry and legislation specifically supporting and raising up U.S. industry would be a good alternative. But the current act, the current proposal in that language is would really just ban a DJI drone without providing a lot of alternatives, specifically in the spray drones, and without specifically addressing any security concerns for the, frankly, millions of drones that are already in use today.
Would the CCC Drones Act impact those drones that are Chinese-made that farmers and ag companies are already using today, or would it only come into play for those new purchases for producers and others who would like to utilize the technology?
So the Senate did not adopt this as an amendment. So if in the reconciliation process they adopt the wording from the House version, that version applies only to new models coming in and acts by banning the FCC, basically banning the FCC from certifying those drones as being able to connect to or use FCC and communication networks. So it would apply only to new models coming in if they take the current wording for the bill. There have been some proposals of extending that or trying to make that retro in some fashion. That, of course, is would have really far-reaching consequences, not least of which of how you would even enforce that with millions of drones already in pretty active use.
Well, Mariah Scott, we want to thank you for taking time to share this issue, both of technology and sustainability, but also looking to the future and how this technology will be available to producers. Thanks for being with us on this edition of Open Mic to discuss that. It is Open Mic, and today, Mariah, you have the last word.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the time and for your thoughtful questions. I really appreciate it. I do just want to close by noting that while there can be concern about drones, what we have seen and what I've seen in the last 10 years of working in this industry is that their impact has been overwhelmingly positive. And in agriculture in particular, they're really helping us transform the way we care for the land. They're affordable tools. They're effective. They keep humans on the ground flying them instead of flying a crop duster or a helicopter, which can be quite dangerous. They're providing great jobs in rural communities, and that's also something that we really strive to. And I feel super excited about the potential for them. I hope that we'll continue to see that technology grow and expand and have even more benefit. So thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
Our thanks to Mariah Scott, CEO of Rantizo, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.